Perception check. Roll for romance. Written by KD Falls. Narrated by Rhea314. Fandom, Dungeons & Dragons, Honor Among Thieves. Pairing, Edgin Darvis, Zenk Yendar. Rating mature, no archive warnings apply. As with several of the minor disasters in Egan's life to date, it's at least partly Simon's fault. They're in the middle of their third retelling of their misadventures en route to becoming, you know, the saviors of Neverwinter, to Edgin's everlasting chagrin, when Simon makes what is, in retrospect, the obvious mistake of actually giving credit where credit is due, and happens to name drop Zenk as their guide through the Underdark. Not that we needed him, Edgin points out, or would have if they hadn't been interrupted by Kira's shriek. Zenk? She squeaks. Zenk Yendar, the paladin who got you the Helm of Disjunction was Zenk Yendar? She is clutching her hands to her chest, cheeks flushed and eyes glowing, her voice attaining a pitch that Edgin thought only dogs could hear. It's more than a little discomforting for that particular sound to emerge from his daughter's throat. Yeah, Simon says, nonplussed. Did we not mention before? Edgin regards Kira suspiciously. So I take it you've heard of him? Kira's eyes widen. You hadn't? Zenk Yendar, the slayer of Zufilithid, the scourge of Menzo Branzen, the hero of the quest for the Oathbreaker's tomb. And you call yourself a harper, Holga says with a shit-eating grin, elbowing Edgin in the side. That's definitely going to leave a bruise. He swats her away with a wince. He's not that famous. You actually met Zenk Yendar. Kira gazes between them, rapt. Tell me everything. People say he's noble of heart and fair of face, tall and strong and shines like the sun. Holga wrinkles her nose in consideration. I mean, he does wear very shiny armor. I guess if the sun hits it just right. I think it's more metaphorical. You know, the innate goodness glowing out of him? Doric says thoughtfully. There really is a sort of aura about him, and he's very aesthetically pleasing for a human. She ignores Simon's affronted look. Oh, yeah, Holga agrees. He's smoking hot. He's smoking hot if you like him tall and chiseled and stuff. Not really my thing, but I get it. Kira turns beseeching eyes on her father, and Edgin sighs. He is tall, he concedes. Sunny, not so much. He's a real stick in the mud, no sense of humor, has a deeply irritating penchant for dressing up bullshit platitudes in flowery language. Grudgingly, because Kira's been lied to enough in the past couple of years, he does add, he is objectively handsome, yes. Brown eyes, good hair, annoyingly fit. Typical paladin. Kira sighs dreamily. Edgin needs to reconsider this whole radical honesty approach. He does not like the idea of anyone inspiring that kind of dreamy sigh in his teenage daughter. He is also like 100 years old, Simon points out, clearly not at all jealous. Doric lifts an eyebrow. He is very well preserved. My dad has met Zenk Yendar. Kira sighs, then sits bolt upright. Oh my gods, do you think you can get his autograph? Holga pats her on the shoulder. Sure, why not? Anything for you, bug. Nope, no, not happening, Edgin says quickly. How would we even... I mean, come on. It's not like we're friends with the guy. I seriously doubt we'll ever see him again. He is so, so wrong about that one. Listen, Edgin is not a hero, okay? He does not quest. It's just that sometimes he finds himself in situations. For example, in the middle of our deep forest, trying to return some arcane artifact to the crypts of the deepening moon, before the rogue wood elves Doric's folk have been squabbling with can get their hands on it. It's a long story. There's a prophecy involved. He fucking hates prophecies. They never end well. Anyway, it's him and Holga, as per, against a metric fuckton of Tendriculos that the elf wizard had somehow summoned? Commanded. It didn't seem like he had actual control over the demon plants now that he'd unleashed them. But anyway, they were significantly bigger and more bloodthirsty than fucking shrubbery had any right to be. And there were way too goddamn many of them. Edgin really didn't have become fertilizer for evil monster bush on his bucket list, but hey, life's a funny old thing. Edgin is doing his level best not to get eaten by a giant vegetable while Holga whacks away with her axe. Doric and Simon ran off after the elf wizard who got them into this whole mess, and he hopes Doric turns into an owlbear again and smashes his shrubbery-summoning skull in. When a blaze of light suddenly illuminates the shadowy forest, the Tendriculos currently trying to gnaw on Edgin's leg gets very tall and then very small in one dizzying swoop of its vines. It squelches loudly in the process. The sound is deeply unsettling. "Begone, O venerable vegetation!" A new voice calls, calm and commanding. And God's fucking damn it, Edgin recognizes that voice. "Seek out friendlier hunting grounds and more suitable prey. These heroes are not for you to dine upon." The hell of it is, Zenk Yendar really does shine like sunlight in this specific instance. Edgin knows it's just the radiant energy of his blade, but the guy knows how to make an entrance, and the outstretched sword in his hand lights him up like a player on a stage. Righteous purpose, and also a literal glowing sword, illuminates his flawless cheekbones, the chiseled line of his jaw, the compassion in his dark eyes. It's a good thing Kira's not here. Edgin doesn't want her to have any more reason to swoon over the guy. To Egin's mingled relief and chagrin, the Tendriculos obey Zenk's command, squelching themselves down into manageable heaps and shuffling away. He must have used some kind of compulsion on them. Or maybe murderous vegetables just have an aversion to glowing swords. Who the fuck knows? "Hey there, Zenk," Holga says, wiping some green ooze off her axe. "Thanks for the assist." Zenk smiles and sheathes his sword, which, wow, that sentence sounds a lot more suggestive in Edgin's head than it should. Anyway, glowing light blade goes away, and the forest returns to its usual murky state of dimness around them. "No thanks are necessary, my friend. I'm sure you would have vanquished your foes with great honor given time, but I am glad to have spared you further trouble. Truly, the Tendriculos know not what harm they do. They bear no malice in their hearts, only hunger, as is their nature." Edgin snorts audibly. "Yeah, if it weren't for their carnivorous appetites, I'd bet they make great houseplants." "No wild creature longs to be tamed," Zenk counters, one irritatingly perfect eyebrow arched. Edgin hadn't missed his literal-mindedness. "And yet even the most wounded of hearts may be gentled, given time and care." Edgin's not gonna unpack all that right now. "Right, sure. Oh shit, do I still have the..." A brief, frantic search through his pockets reveals that, yes, he is still in possession of the holy thingamabob that Doric's been so fussed about returning to the crypts. "Okay, cool, we're good then. Thanks, I guess, for..." But Zenk is staring at the mystical what's-it in his hand.
"The Orb of Angerad."
Yeah, Edgin says. "The orb of... what's her name? Right. Doric's all in a tizzy about it. We've got to get it back to the crypt."
A noble quest indeed, to safeguard the essence of the Queen of Arvindor.
Zenk reaches out to cup his hands over Edgin's, as though concealing the orb from prying eyes, or maybe caressing it. It's a little weird.
Such an artifact could wreak either awesome glory or wretched ruination, depending upon its wielder. It is well that one such as you should carry it home.
Edgin narrows his eyes, uncertain if that was a compliment or if Zenk's implying he's too stupid to be able to use the dratted thing. He decides it's not worth debating.
Well, we'd best go on, carrying it home, I guess.
The crypts of the deepening moon are closely guarded, Zenk adds, and their defenses are not terribly discerning. I would gladly relieve you of this charge and see the orb return to its sanctified resting place, if you should honor me with your trust.
Great, Holga says brightly. I'm sick of hacking at weeds, and we should probably find out if Doric and Simon are still alive. Give the paladin the magic thingy, Ed. He knows what he's doing with it.
Edgin sighs and gives the paladin the magic thingy.
I had a plan, you know, he complains, for the principle of the thing. He's not even getting a peek into the crypts themselves now, which, really, what was the point of coming all this way then?
Breaking and entering is kind of my jam.
The crypts are guarded by Baelnorn liches and green warders, Zenk points out.
So, undead spellcasters plus a new breed of attack shrubbery. Fantastic. Fine, Edgin's happy enough to sit this one out.
Thank you, Harper, Zenk continues, tucking the orb into the breastplate of his stupidly shiny armor in a reverential manner.
May you find your friends in good health and swiftly. I swear to you that the orb shall be safely restored.
He clasps Egan's shoulder, his grip warm and firm, dark eyes solemn. He really does have nice eyes, Edgin concedes, grudgingly, in the privacy of his own head. And they're both of a height, which he appreciates for reasons he'd rather not examine too closely.
Hey, Zenk, Holga calls, from where she's leaning on the hilt of her axe like it's a walking stick.
I promised Darkira that we'd get her your autograph if we ever ran into you again. What do you say? She's got a huge crush on you. It'd mean a lot to her.
Zenk releases Edgin in order to give Holga a curious look.
I don't understand how the Harper's daughter could crush me with her slight weight, no matter how determined. But I would be happy to indulge the good lady's whim. Perhaps I shall call upon you after our respective quests are concluded.
It's not a quest, Edgin grits out, and you really don't have to—
Great, thanks,
Holga says over him. We've set up shop in Port Last these days. Just ask anyone at the Jack and Saber, they'll point you in the right direction. Kira will absolutely love you.
I am sure I will hold any child of Edgin's in the highest esteem, Zenk says gravely. He raises a hand in farewell. Until we meet again, my friends.
Edgin waits until he's out of sight, still walking in that unnaturally straight line, gods curse it. How does he manage that in a fucking forest? Before turning on Holga with a scowl.
You know, sometimes I hate you almost as much as I hate him.
Holga claps him on the shoulder. Unlike Zenk's warm clasp, hers leaves a tangible impact.
You'll get over it.
Zenk's visit goes just as well as Edgin had feared. He's kind, he's sincere, he calls Kira Fair Maiden, and has her giggling after him for days. He charms the notoriously misanthropic hostess of the Jack and Saber, banishes an angry redcap from the riverbank, and spends an entire hour patiently teaching Kira how to braid her thick curls in the ancient Thayan style his own mother had once favored. He even fixes the broken window shutter that Egan's been swearing he'll get around to one of these days. It's absolutely insufferable. When he finally takes his leave of them after dinner, Edgin offers to walk him back to town, mostly so that he can ensure Kira doesn't try to follow the guy home. She still has that pendant of invisibility, and unfortunately there are ways in which she is definitely Edgin's kid. He keeps a wary ear out for the sounds of an invisible but still cultish 14-year-old on the path as they walk. Eventually, Zenk breaks the silence.
"Forgive my impertinence, if it is such, but I must confess to curiosity. When you once spoke to me of your motivations for unseating the erstwhile Lord of Neverwinter, it seemed that forefront in your mind was the desire to restore your family. I am gladdened to see your daughter happy and hale in your care again. But you had also hoped to acquire the Tablet of Reawakening. Were you unsuccessful in that particular element of your quest, or..."
He trails off delicately. Edgin grimaces, shoving his hands deep into the pockets of his jackets. "Or are you wondering if I actually listened to your warning about it? As it happens, yes, I got the tablet after all, and yes, I used it." For the first time in their admittedly brief acquaintance, Zenk looks uncomfortable, almost. Or maybe it's just a trick of the twilight.
"I see. And your lady wife?"
Edgin huffs out a breath, not really a laugh. "I didn't use it for Zia. During our showdown with Sofina, Holga... Well, it was just shit luck, really. Bad roll of the dice. Anyway, she died from the Red Wizard's blade, and I had that tablet, so..."
He shrugs, keeping his gaze on the path before him.
"Only one use. I couldn't bring my wife back."
"No," Zenk says softly. "But you did restore Kira's mother to her."
Ugh, he's just so fucking earnest. Edgin can't stand it. But fortunately, that's when they both hear the distinctive sound of a twig snapping in the underbrush along the path, followed by a teenager's muttered curse. And Edgin winds up hauling a sheepish, no longer invisible Kira home by the ear after all. She refuses to wash her hair for a week after Zank's visit, staring at herself in the mirror and touching the braid with reverent fingers. She also somehow acquires a local artist's rendition of his old wanted poster from Menzo Branzen and hangs it directly over her bed. She rapturously tells it good night and good morning every goddamn day now, kissing her fingertips and pressing them to the poster's cheek. Edgin would swear its eyes follow him through the bedroom. A month later, Kira still won't shut up about him. Edgin loves his daughter more than all the golden Neverwinter, but he's seriously considering begging Simon for a silencing spell. He has to resort to handing her an unnecessarily long list of errands just to get a little peace and quiet for one blessed afternoon. Zenk this, Zenk that. You'd think he'd single-handedly hung the moon and all the stars in the sky. He rants to Holga while chopping up vegetables for stew. He doesn't particularly enjoy cooking, but he's competent enough, and if they left meals to Holga, they'd be eating raw potatoes 5 nights a week. "And also, what the hell kind of name is Zenk, anyway? It sounds like the noise a cat makes right before it's sick all over your bedspread."
"You've been thinking about shouting his name in bed, haven't you?"
Holga says knowingly. Edgin scowls at her. "That's even worse, can you imagine? Oh, take me, Zenk. Harder, Zenk. Ugh, talk about killing the vibe." Holga steals some chopped carrots and pops them in her mouth.
"So you have been thinking about it?"
"Obviously," Edgin snaps. "I'm not fucking blind." Holga hums, nodding. "I bet he fucks like a metronome too, you know?" She makes a highly suggestive, repetitive gesture. "In, out, in, out. No variation, same exact rhythm every time. Boring." Edgin stares at her, torn between horror and fascination, knife hovering forgotten mid-chop. You've really thought about this, huh? Wait, how do you even know what a metronome is?
Marlamin loved the piano, Holga says wistfully. Before he can tug any further on that particular thread, Kira bursts through the front door, carrying precisely none of the items he'd sent her out to acquire.
The news is all over the marketplace, she says breathlessly. Apparently, Zenk Yandar just defeated the Worm of Mithril Hall.
Edgin stabs the knife down into his chopping board with a groan.
Ugh, are you kidding me? How does he even have time to do all the great deeds people claim he's done? Seriously, doesn't the guy ever sleep?
He points a finger at Holga before she can open her mouth.
Not a word out of you.
She folds her arms across her chest with a smirk.
You just seem super concerned about his sleeping arrangements.
Nope.
The next time he runs into Zenk, it could still plausibly be a coincidence. Luskan is a city whose best days are far behind it, more Pirate Cove than Free City at this point, and Egan's sure it holds plenty of villainy for a paladin like Zenk to oppose or whatever. So yeah. It's Simon's fault that Egan is here himself, of course. All due to the piracy. Luskan is a good place to pick up certain arcane items, and Simon is working on a whole... It's hard to explain. It's hard for Simon to explain to Edgen specifically, and after his fourth rambling monologue on that subject, Edgen stopped caring about the why and focused on the what and how instead. The what being a particular gem of unnatural providence, currently in the possession of one of the city's self-styled high captains, and the how being...
Is there a reason Doric can't be the one in the dress?
Egan asks skeptically when he first sees it. For starters, it's a light green velvet brocade that would look fantastic with Doric's coloring, but just kind of washes out Edgen's skin tone. He's much better in jewel tones, particularly a nice deep blue. Simon's mouth twists.
Apart from the fact that I don't really want to have to watch my girlfriend seduce a pirate captain 3 times her age.
Egan perks up at that.
Oh hey, are we formally labeling the relationship now? When did that happen?
The High Captains of Luskan are notoriously prejudiced against non-humans, Doric says flatly, ignoring this aside.
No way a tiefling gets past the city gates, let alone into Tower Kurth.
And I can't just seduce the guy in my usual attire.
He's only partial to women, Simon says, almost apologetically. Of a certain class, hence the gown. So unless maybe Holga?
Holga folds her arms over her chest, unimpressed.
Gods, no, nobody wants to see that, Edgen says hastily. I'll put on the damn dress. You'd better give me jewelry to match, though. No one wears décolletage that low without appropriate adornment.
The gown is accompanied by an engraved invitation that Doric assures him was very difficult to procure. This particular high captain has pretensions toward grandeur. His political faction is currently in ascendance, and enjoys flaunting his prosperity over the much-fallen noble houses of Luskan. So, fancy party in his evil lair. At least it should be interesting. So that's how he next encounters Zenk, at a pirate's ball, dressed to the nines in a fabulous green gown and blonde wig, hanging seductively off the arm of a pirate captain 3 times Doric's age, which is still, you know, a bit of an age leap for Egan, thanks very much, he's not that old yet. It's not the fact of the dress that Egan minds particularly. Sure, he's seen better days himself, but he still cuts a fine enough figure, and his ass looks particularly fantastic in this getup. But that's a whole lot of explaining he'd really rather not do amidst a horde of scheming pirates, and if Zenk reacts badly in the moment, he could blow the whole operation. Also, what the hell is Zenk Yandar doing amid said horde of scheming pirates? He doesn't call Edgen out. Maybe if Edgen is very, very lucky, he won't recognize him at all.
Nothing in Zenk's serene expression changes as his gaze passes across the great hall of Tower Kurth. If his eyes widen ever so slightly as he takes in Edgin's appearance, nah, Edgin's probably just imagining that. But he's definitely not imagining it when Zenk approaches the captain and Edgin at the end of an excruciatingly poorly executed waltz and politely requests to cut in. The captain agrees with forced joviality and narrowed eyes, giving a firm pat to Edgin's rump before passing him over. It's definitely a good thing they didn't try to send Holga here tonight instead. She'd have castrated the guy by now. The musicians strike up the next dance. Ugh, that harp clearly needs tuning. And why would you hire a piper who can't master the most basic of harmonies? But anyway, under the cover of the music, Edgin hisses, "What in the seven hells are you doing here?" Zenk is a good dancer, because of course he fucking is. His every movement precisely on beat. "I might ask the same of you, good lady." Edgin smiles prettily at him as he steps hard on the toe of Zenk's very shiny boot. Zenk doesn't so much as wince. "Dancing, what does it look like?" "It looks very much like you're hoping to relieve Captain Kurth of the Euclase crystal he always wears on that pendant around his neck." "Aw, Zenk, you know me too well." Zenk shrugs his head, but Edgin would swear he looks almost amused. "A rare gem, perhaps, but not so valuable as to be worth such effort on your part." "What, this old thing?" Edgin shimmies in a way that he knows draws attention to the padded bust of his décolletage. "I've had it lying around in the back of my wardrobe for ages." "A fine costume indeed," Zenk says, "though the hue does not suit you so perfectly as you deserve. Sapphire blue would better complement your eyes." "See, this is what I've been saying. This color just washes me out." Edgin allows Zenk to twirl him, making sure to twist his hips so the skirt will fan out just so. He has to admit that Zenk's not looking so bad himself tonight. His formal attire appears simple and elegant, in contrast to the gaudy opulence of most of those present. The burnished copper tone of his jacket and waistcoat providing a pleasing contrast to the cream of his crisp shirt and indecently tight trousers. Edgin finds himself staring, fascinated, at the trim lines of Zenk's waist and has to clear his throat. Anyway, I'm not stealing the gem for money. Simon needs it for some spellcasting ritual thing. Zenk frowns. A flame strike. Your sorcerer did not seem the sort to dabble in such powerful battle magics. No, definitely not that. It's a protective thing. Please don't ask me to remember the details. There were a lot of details. Edgin tightens his grip on Zenk's hand very deliberately. And stop dodging my initial question. What's a guy like you doing in a pirate's nest like this? A fair exchange of information, Zenk concedes. I am here to negotiate peace on behalf of the Whalebones. These Luskanite captains have been raiding the poor folk all season. Oh, any treaty they sign won't even be worth the price of the parchment, Edgin says at once, because he can't help himself. Old Kurth has been boasting about the lucrative trade in rock feathers all evening. His pet wild mage has been making a killing with Qual's feather tokens. They've become a luxury item along the Sword Coast this season. No way they'll lay off the Whalebones until the fad passes. Zenk hums thoughtfully as he executes a perfect la volta. All knowledge is worth having. I thank you for this, my friend. The dance move brings Edgin flush against him for several beats, and it's a good thing Zenk is under no illusions about Edgin's actual anatomy. And okay, Edgin's a little worked up with all the dancing and stuff by now, so that specific part of his anatomy is more than usually apparent at this particular moment. Zenk lifts a very pointed eyebrow.
Don't read too much into it, Edgin says, refusing to be embarrassed. It's been a very long time since I've had a good dance partner, okay?
Perhaps I should not return you to the captain in such a state, then.
Zenk's voice has gone low and intent in a manner Edgin would not find uninteresting under other circumstances, or these circumstances, if he's being honest, which he's trying to be better about these days.
Yeah, he murmurs a little breathlessly. You have a better suggestion. I thought paladins were too noble-minded to indulge in that kind of thing.
Zenk gives him a smile that is definitely not ballroom appropriate.
There is no dishonor in such indulgences, assuming one's partner is of the same mind. Of course, neither is there any shame in celibacy, should that be one's preference.
Almost as an afterthought, he adds, though it certainly is not mine. Edgin clears his throat. Good to know, I guess.
But he really does have a job to do here, and it's not flirting with Zenk Yendar of all fucking people. Besides which, their dance has come to its end.
All right, he says, shaking his head. Good chat, but I think you've made the captain jealous enough already. Thanks for the assist. He'll definitely be keeping me close for the rest of the party.
Zenk blinks, then releases him smoothly.
Of course. I wish you good fortune in this endeavor. But Edgin can feel Zenk's eyes on him for the rest of the ball. He acquires the gem, of course, that goes without saying. Getting out of the tower afterward is a bit trickier, but Holgen and Simon come through with the exit strategy, and all in all, it's one of their smoother heists. If he winds up keeping the green dress afterward shoved in the back of his wardrobe, well, that's his own business. Fuck, it really has been way too long since he last got laid. It definitely stops becoming a coincidence after that. When the Emerald Enclave sends Doric off on a quest to the Evermoors, that goes badly, and Simon wrangles Edgin and Holga along to rescue her, somehow Zenk is there as well, fighting off fog giants. When Kira stumbles across a band of counterfeiters, while visiting friends in Neverwinter, Zenk is the one who gets them into the False Mint and covers their tracks after they've sabotaged the infernal machine. When Holga's new halfling beau turns out to be a Gentarim agent, Zenk shows up at the last possible minute to foil an assassin's plot. It's getting ridiculous, honestly. And then he gifts Kira a purebred mastiff puppy for her 15th birthday. A noble companion for a deserving maiden. His note reads, he is the noblest, most wonderful, and altruistic of all men. Kira sighs, clutching the puppy to her chest. It yips in alarmed protest. He wants to fuck your dad so bad it makes him look stupid. Holga retorts with a grin. Kira just blushes and giggles a lot in response, which is a frankly worrisome reaction from his own daughter. Then the puppy manages to squirm out of her arms and goes tearing after a squirrel, which winds up occupying the rest of their afternoon. In the privacy of the Jack and Saber that evening, and by privacy he just means that Kira's not there, and none of the dodgy drunks around them are paying them any mind, Edgin does point out that the only time Zenk has shown him the slightest interest like that was when he was literally disguised as a woman. Holga just snorts. That's way more interest than he's shown any actual women, though.
You don't know that.
Edgin takes a bracing gulp of the terrible ale. Anyway, he's all about the straight and narrow, right? And I am definitely not straight or narrow.
You're just worried about the boring metronome sex, Holga says sagely.
Understandable, can't help you there. Edgin could have lived the rest of his life quite happily never thinking about metronome sex again, thank you.
My point, he says,
is that one weird flirtation with, you know, flirtation aside, the guy has never shown any actual romantic or sexual interest in me. Holga gives him a very flat look. Remember when you got all wet and muddy in the Evermoors that one time, and Zank wound up falling into the bog right after you? It wasn't because the fog giant hit him. He saw you and literally tripped over his own feet. Edgin can feel his face heat up. That's not... Remember when you got his shirt off after the assassin tried to knife him in the shoulder? He was bleeding. I was trying to help. It barely even grazed him, and you both knew it. Holga raised an eyebrow. If Kira hadn't been right there, he definitely would have got your kid off, too. And that's just circumstantial. Holga rolls her eyes. He's saved your ass, like, 5 times in the past month alone, and just gave your kid a puppy for her birthday. I think he's made his intentions pretty clear. Go fuck him metronome style already, Ed. I don't like you, Edgin complains, and Holga raises her tankard in a toast. The problem is, Edgin doesn't actually know how to find Zenk Yendar on his own. Historically, not counting their very first encounter in search of the Helm of Disjunction, Zenk has always been the one to find him. Mostly by virtue of just turning up at random places at the right moment, as far as Edgin can tell. He seriously contemplates just, like, wandering into a cave full of trolls to see if Zenk will manifest in response to mortal danger. But that's probably not the smartest approach to take. He'll save it for Plan E. Plan A is to find out where Zenk actually lives. He gives that up after about 3 days. Nobody in Port Last has that information, and while the Emerald Enclave clearly has methods of getting a hold of the guy, Doric flat out refuses to tell him anything further. It's not like we have his home address, Edgin, she says testily. Paladins like Zenk don't tend to put down roots like that anyway. I don't think he's called any place home since they fell to the Red Wizards. He literally has to sleep somewhere. Edgin points out. Doric just shrugs. Plan B involves summoning Zenk to him instead, but once again Doric proves adamant in preserving the Emerald Enclave's secrets, and Simon won't teach him any calling spells because he's more scared of his girlfriend than he is of Edgin, which, fair enough, but also not helpful. He's hard at work on concocting Plan C, by which he means drinking moodily at the Jack and Saber, when Zenk undermines his process by just showing up in front of him. That is deeply unfair of you, Edgin informs him in lieu of an actual greeting. I was planning. You cheated. Zenk quirks one perfect eyebrow. I was not aware I had trespassed some unwritten code, but I shall endeavor to better my efforts in the future. Edgin groans, resting his forehead on the probably filthy table. Shut up. I can't believe I actually want to fuck you. Then he actually hears the words he's just spoken aloud, and decides his best course of action is to remain exactly in this position until Zenk goes away again. That sounds most trying for you, Zenk says. His tone is solemn, but when Edgin reluctantly lifts his head, he can see amusement lurking in the corners of Zenk's mouth. It's deeply unsettling that he can apparently read Zenk's facial expressions now. Would it improve or exacerbate that situation were I to tell you that I return the sentiment? Oh, no, that makes it much worse. Edgin sighs. What are you doing here anyway? Zenk takes the seat across the table from him, spine ramrod straight as ever. I came to ensure that my gift had safely reached Lady Kira, with my apologies for being unable to attend her birthday celebrations in person. She expressed her gratitude. It seems the pup is thriving. The pup has been using the neck of my second best loot as a chew toy, Edgin says wryly.
I wanted to name her Hellbeast, but I was outvoted. Reluctantly, he adds, she is cute, though. Even if she's going to eat us out of house and home when she grows up. I know how big Mastiffs can get, and those puppy paws are huge.
Zenk nods, lips curling into a smile.
I hope she will serve as a formidable protector as your daughter comes of age. Oh, she'll rip all of Kira's suitors' throats out, that's for sure. Edgin agrees, more cheerfully now. It's a pleasant thought. Kira's infatuation with Zenk finally seems to have passed its peak, but that means she's now sighing over the blacksmith's apprentice, which poses a much more immediate concern. At least he never had to worry about Zenk's intentions towards Kira. But it was definitely weird having the hots for his teenage daughter's crush. So at least that's less of an issue now. And on that note...
About the whole sentiment thing that we mentioned earlier.
Zenk nods serenely. I assume you refer to your previously expressed desire to fuck me. The profanity really shouldn't sound so hot coming out of Zenk's mouth, but well, here they are. Egan's gonna have to sleep with him now, it's that or perish of mortification at this point.
Yeah, Edgin says, since the only way out is through. Or, you know, the other way around. Whichever. I don't have a particular preference.
I find both experiences to be of equal pleasure myself, Zenk agrees, like they're discussing the state of the weather or tastes in weaponry. Edgin kind of wants to die. This is definitely one of the weirdest boners he's ever had.
I have already procured a room at the Alliance Arms, if you would care to accompany me there.
Edgin just gapes at him for a minute.
Wait, you already planned this? Now, today?
Not in the slightest, Zenk says. For the barest moment, something like uncertainty passes across his otherwise calm countenance.
I had no notion that my day would lead me to such... welcome yet unforeseen circumstances.
You've already booked a room at the inn.
Zenk blinks, nonplussed. I do have to sleep somewhere, you know.
His bemusement is not allayed when Edgin bursts out laughing, but he bears it with good grace. Edgin will never, ever admit it to Holga, but Zenk really does fuck like a metronome. In, out, in a maddeningly perfect rhythm, absolutely railing Edgin into the mattress, and it's far and away the best sex Edgin has had in literal decades. And when it's his turn to return the favor, he quickly figures out how to reduce Zenk to a writhing, babbling mess, which is even better. He is still reluctant to shout Zenk's name in bed. It just doesn't flow naturally off the tongue in such conditions. But hey... it's early days yet. He could still be convinced. The end. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. Thank you for listening.